Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. I'm going to see if I still remember how to do this. This is fun. As you know, I went on vacation. And so last week, we got basically a recap episode. I just talked about what was going on. I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. You can find me here on the unofficial WWE Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter. I am always over there at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling, other fun stuff over there. Now, usually the news and notes are from this last week of wrestling, and we get our news generally from Twitter. But boy, oh boy, I leave you guys for a week. I leave you guys for one episode of the illustrious award-winning multiple million download unofficial WWE podcast NXT edition, and y'all just go insane, and wrestling just turns into a crazy fever dream. I felt as though if I left you guys that I could trust you, and what you guys did is I left you at home and you guys threw a big party and just burned the house down. And so first off, you're grounded. That means no more cell phone, ma'am or mister, or however you identify. There's going to be a lot of privileges that are not going to be afforded to you. And I think it's time for you to go to your room and think about what you did. So pause it, go to your room, sit in a corner with your face in that corner. Still play this, but just know that this whole time I'm not mad at you, I'm just disappointed. Okay, a lot happened this last week while I was gone. Felt like I didn't leave long enough for everything to be crazy, but here we are. But that's fine, just gives me more to talk into your ears about. So, couple things were interesting to me from this last week. We just finished up with Hell in a Cell. So Roman Reigns took on Jey Uso in a Hell in a Cell I Quit match, which is an interesting combination of two stipulations that have never gone together. Roman's defending the Universal title against Jey again. If Jey wins, he becomes Universal Champion. If Jey says, I quit, he's some version of, I'm a little unclear, excommunicated from the family slash has to do Roman's bidding. Obviously, Jey wasn't going to win this match. They had an excellent match. I loved it. It was one of my favorites from that night. And Jimmy comes out to help Jey, and Roman feigns crying and puts Jey in a chokehold, or rather Jimmy in a chokehold, so Jey has to say, I quit. Cool finish. You got an actual finish to the match. But Jey didn't actually quit because of anything Roman did to him. He quit because Roman was choking out Jimmy. It's a cool finish. I like that. Roman stays your Universal Champion, nailed that word, and is going to continue on, makes him look better, makes Jey look better because he withstood what Roman was dishing out and didn't quit. Got Jimmy involved in the story. They had a great story moment, and Roman is doing some really good acting. Not all wrestlers make great actors. Roman Reigns apparently does. And this is one of those things where turning somebody heel is not always the answer to turn them heel or to turn them into a bad guy. But in the case of a lot of wrestlers in the past, some people work better as heels, and some people can really shine in a bad guy capacity. And evidently, Roman Reigns is one of those people. So, we have a lot to look forward to with Roman Reigns. I'm also excited to see him move on to another challenger and to see if this is going to turn into a stable situation or what we have here now with Jey having to do his bidding and Afa and Sika from their family were out at the entrance ramp with Roman, so he's got the family behind him. I love everything about this, and it's fantastic, and I can't wait till there's fans so that we can get Roman Reigns with a bunch of booze and it not be a disaster. MJF and Jericho. I don't usually talk about AEW on this show. One, we have a fantastic AEW show on this very network. Two, I've always been an NXT guy personally. So between the two, when I'm watching them, I watch them Thursday mornings and record the podcast right after. I always watch NXT. But MJF and Jericho went for a steak dinner to discuss MJF joining the Inner Circle. And then what happened? Then what happened is something that would be very difficult to explain to somebody who's not a wrestling fan. It might be difficult to explain to somebody who is a wrestling fan. They did a musical number, like a Rat Pack Broadway musical number, complete with dancing and choreographed. That's not the word, but I can't think of the right word. Choreography. There it is. I knew I'd get to it. I had to talk through it. And what I could do is I could edit that part out so I don't look dumb. But what you need to know about me is that I'm always going to go for the joke. And the plain fact of the matter is that it's funnier if I don't take that out. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave it because it's worse for me as a professional, but it's funnier. And so I'm going to leave it in because it's funnier. And I did that for you. And again, I'm still not upset at you. I'm disappointed at you. I don't want to, mister, ma'am, I don't want to see your face come out of that corner. Sasha Banks is your new SmackDown Women's Champion. Her and Bayley had an excellent match, also at Hell in a Cell. It was one of the matches that felt like it should have been in a Hell in a Cell, along with Roman and Jay. Because when you have a Hell in a Cell match, it should be very personal. Orton and Drew, same thing. And in the past, we've had matches that shouldn't be Hell in a Cell matches. You could pick your favorite from when Hell in a Cell was invented as a pay-per-view. But even last year, The Fiend and Seth Rollins. Ignore for a second how bad the match was itself. And ignore the fact that there was a ref stoppage in a Hell in a Cell match. That just didn't need to be in a Hell in a Cell. The feud wasn't there yet. And this one absolutely should have been. And this Sasha Banks-Bailey story, since they have been on the main roster, has been teased for years. Originally when Bailey was a good guy and Sasha was a bad guy. Now it's Bailey the bad guy, Sasha the good guy. I think Sasha works better as a heel. I'm not a huge Sasha Banks guy. Just because she's one of those wrestlers that gets talked up a lot, and I think your expectations for her are so high that really nothing that person does is going to match what you have been told. But the right way to go in this story was to put Sasha as the women's champion. Now, the bigger task is having her successfully defend it. Sasha Banks, the rap on her is that she is good at winning championships, but she is terrible at retaining them. That comes from mostly her feud with Charlotte Flair, which I believe at the time was the Raw Women's Championship. And if I remember correctly, there was a situation where Sasha Banks would win at every pay-per-view, and then they would have a rematch on TV, and Charlotte Flair would always win. So Sasha won the title multiple times, and then just lost it the next time. Seems as though it's just a way to get Charlotte Flair's championship numbers up. But the rap on Sasha Banks because of that is that she cannot successfully defend a title. Doesn't help that she just lost the Raw Women's title as well. But this part of the story, excellent. I'd love to see him do another match. And then from there, I'd love to see Sasha Banks work with Bianca Belair and the other women whose names are escaping me that are now on SmackDown from the draft. I want to see her work with people because Sasha Banks is fantastic in the ring. She's also a rare wrestler that's really good at making other people look strong and good and talented while not taking anything away from herself. So I'm excited to see what Sasha does. So when I did predictions with Matt, not for this pay-per-view, but for the last one, it was again Drew McIntyre defending the WWE title against Randy Orton. And I came to the conclusion at that point that Orton was going to win. It just felt inevitable. And I was wrong. It wasn't at that pay-per-view. It was at this one because Randy Orton beat Drew McIntyre in a Hell in a Cell match, as clean as Randy Orton is going to win a match, with the RKO in the middle of the ring, and he is now a 14-time champion. I don't remember if that ties Triple H or if he's one behind. I don't remember. But I'm torn, because on one hand, Randy Orton is doing some of the best work of his career, and it's never a bad thing to have a strong character be your champion. And on the other hand, I really think that Drew should still be the WWE champion. I think that it's a situation where I really like the way that Drew McIntyre has been booked since winning the championship in April. So he's been champion 6 months and change. And since then, he's been featured heavily on the shows. He's been in multiple segments. He's super, super, super charismatic. He's a really good talker. He's a really good wrestler. And he's gotten real quality wins over real quality opponents. And he's just felt like a big star, and the title felt right on him. Conversely, when he was on Raw without the title, it just looked weird. And I think my worry is that he was not presented well before he won the title. He was presented well during and then after the Royal Rumble when he won and kicked Brock Lesnar out of the ring. So my worry is that they don't know what to do with somebody that is not anymore the WWE champion. On Raw, it was great. He started the show. He had a dust-up with The Miz and John Morrison. Then he came back out later for a match with The Miz. He was all over the show. He was at the end of the show as well with Randy Orton and The Fiend, who they need to stop putting in the title contention because The Fiend doesn't work as champion. But I digress. Okay, so Randy is your WWE champion. Pardon me. So presumably, at some point, we're going to do Randy Orton and Edge again. But this Randy Orton Edge story is just a very, very personal story, and it does not require that Randy holds the WWE championship. So I guess I just really want Drew to be WWE champion, because I'm worried about how they're going to use him now. My only hope is to lead some credence to rumors that they want to have Drew win the title again when there's real fans in the building to get that reaction. But I do not trust WWE to stick with that plan 10 minutes down the road, much less 10 months down the road. And again, Randy Orton and Edge don't need the WWE title. It's like Goldberg Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania when they took the title off of Kevin Owens, put it onto Goldberg, and then they had their match at WrestleMania. It didn't need the championship for that match. So, disappointed to a degree, but also am fine with it. It's a weird set of feelings that are inside of me. Randy Orton's really good right now, and so I guess I can't be too mad. So, Pat McAfee's back in NXT as well. We're going to see him in a minute. Seems like it was a pulling case of emergency thing with Ridge Holland being hurt, and they had to kind of alter the story. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, but I think it might be a really good move. And so, from NXT, we have Halloween Havoc coming to us from the Capitol Wrestling Center. Again, we have Performance Center athletes sparingly around, and then we have the virtual Thunderdome video screen fans. They're going over the set. They have the smoke. They have the graves. They have the big pumpkin. That's perfect. Those are the three things you need for Halloween Havoc. You need smoke. Check. You need graves. Check. You need a pumpkin. Check. Awesome. We get a hell of an opening by Shotzi Blackheart, who is your host here. I'm going to guess the outfit was Frankenstein inspired, although I am not sure. It's just kind of a horror outfit. This seems like it is Shotzi Blackheart's bag. This seems like Shotzi's having the time of her life. She's not really that much of a host as much as she is there to do the spin the wheel, make the deal thing, and then interfere in a match later. But Shotzi's having the time of her life. And then we flash right to Damian Priest, who gets a badass guitar solo before his entrance. I'm not sure who the guitarist was. Anytime you have a live instrument playing somebody to the ring, it makes that person look like a star. At no point before this did I feel that way about Damian Priest, but if you have a dude there playing a guitar solo and I could see him playing it and I could see Damian Priest in the ring, Damian Priest looks awesome. That always works 100% of the time. Remember when Shinsuke Nakamura had that violinist play him to the ring? I think it was once on NXT and once when he debuted on SmackDown. That was so cool. And I would not have thought adding a violinist would just make you look awesome, but it did. Remember when Shinsuke was cool for like a few minutes on the main roster and then started a feud with Dolph Ziggler and we knew it was downhill? He sure was cool back then, huh? Johnny Gargano comes out. And the pumpkin is a big inflatable pumpkin that's up at the entrance ramp. And Johnny immediately notices the pumpkin. He points at it over his shoulder, remarking on how cool it is, and then walks up to the pumpkin and immediately cuts the pumpkin and it deflates. And I am hard-pressed to think of a better bad guy move than cutting the most essential part of the Halloween Havoc set. I'm joking a little bit, but I'm not joking that much when I say if there hadn't been a pumpkin, I would have been severely disappointed. I would have watched it anyway, and I have to watch it to be able to talk to you guys about it. But if there hadn't been a pumpkin, you better believe I wouldn't have talked about Roman or Sasha. I'd cut those two out, and I would have talked about them not having a pumpkin for 5 minutes. And I don't want that, and you certainly don't want that. So it's best that it was there. And I just love that Johnny knows that everybody loves that pumpkin. He probably loves the pumpkin too. And because he's a jerk, he's a big old jerk on the inside and out, he decided the first thing he wanted to do is cut that pumpkin. I hate that it's gone, but I love that they set up that pumpkin, they blew it up, they fixed the lighting for it, and then immediately had Johnny cut it. I love that so much. I love when people are jerks in creative ways in wrestling. It cuts over to Shotzi, who's up on like a little pedestal up. I'm not sure if it was by the entrance ramp or I think it was off to the side. And she's going to do the spin the wheel, make the deal. She's going to do this twice tonight. Again, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but spin the wheel, make the deal is essentially a big wheel with a bunch of match stipulations on it. So, excuse me. Tables, ladders, and chairs. So on and so forth. And we haven't seen Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal in a long time. Usually with Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal, you will find out your match type before you're actually in the ring for it. This, I think, is better because you don't know until you're up there what you're going to be doing. Perfect. Love it. Shotzi Blackheart's the perfect person to do this with. Shotzi spins the wheel, and it's going to be a Devil's Playground match. Johnny is concerned. Damian Priest seems very happy with this stipulation. If you're unfamiliar with what a Devil's Playground match is, shame on you. This is wrestling. We do stuff weird over here. I promise you I'm not bragging. I'm such a nerd that, and I've watched wrestling for so long, that I immediately knew in WWE parlance what a Devil's Playground match would be. I knew it was going to be a false count anywhere match. And again, I can't stress enough how much I'm not bragging and how embarrassing it is for me to admit to you on this award-winning podcast that I'm such a nerd and so focused on wrestling that I knew that WWE would call a false count anywhere match on Halloween a Devil's Playground match. You could have woken me up out of a stone-cold sleep and shaken me and said you broke into my home and made me tell you what they would call a Falls Count Anywhere match on Halloween in WWE, and I promise you I would have said a Devil's Playground. And I'm not even mad at it. I'm a little mad at myself. I'm not even mad at WWE. That's an awesome name for a Falls Count Anywhere match. I suggest we call that from now on. So again, this is no disqualification. Anything goes, falls count anywhere, meaning you can pin or submit your opponent in the parking lot if you want. The ref is going to follow the two guys, and the only job the ref has is to count the three or see if somebody passed out or see if somebody submits. We have Johnny with a kendo stick and Priest with a baton, and Johnny swings that kendo stick. Priest dodges out of the way, and we cut to a break. And then we come back, and they're just fighting on the set. Because I don't know about you, but if I'm cutting to a commercial, I want it to be in the middle of a move, and then I want to come back with them in a completely different place. That's what I would like. So because they're up near the wheel, we get a good view of the Thunderdome video screen fans. And, I understand that we're dealing with a weird time with COVID, and fans can't be there, but it is so weird watching a person who's sitting at home staring at a screen, not moving or reacting that much at all, probably because they know they're on television and don't want to freak out. And the sound still isn't good, so it still sounds like when you're playing a WWE 2K video game and you're in like a pause screen, but it's still playing the noise from the fans, but it's real dim and they just sound like a video game. Which the fans that are actual, or rather the performance center athletes that are actually there help with that, but it's still just so weird every time I see it. I don't know. I just can't get used to it. They're fighting on that stage where the wheel is, and I really wish Shotzi were still up on the stage. I don't know what Shotzi would have done, but it would have been great because Shotzi's great and everything she does is great. This is one of the many things I'm going to have to talk about tonight, that not only would it be weird to talk to a non-wrestling fan about, but it's weird for me to talk to you about this. The combination of words that I have to say to you feels uncomfortable, but Damian Priest is set up for a move, and the Grim Reaper, or somebody wearing the outfit from Scream, pick your favorite, hits Damian Priest with a pipe, and then stares down Johnny, and Johnny does not appear to know who it is, and then the Grim Reaper, or the guy from Scream, pick your favorite, gets off the stage, and then hands a gravestone to Johnny. And Johnny hits Damian Priest with the gravestone, and Damian Priest falls off of the stage onto the floor to the side. And then Johnny crawls over and pins him. So Johnny Gargano is your new North American champion. That Grim Reaper's 100% Austin Theory. Has to be, right? I literally can't think of who else that would possibly be at all. In the whole of NXT, I can't think of anybody else that would be. They've set up a mentor-ish relationship with Johnny for Austin Theory, and it feels like it has to be Austin Theory. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess he dressed up as the guy from Scream or the Grim Reaper, pick your favorite. And that fit with the theme, so I guess I can't be mad at him. And Johnny Gargano is your new North American champion. That's interesting. I didn't think Johnny was going to win. I thought they were going to play out this Damian Priest thing a little bit more. But, I mean, I like Johnny more. I'm more used to him than I am Damian Priest, so I'm never going to be mad at that. What's weird is that this was a short match, especially by Johnny Gargano standards. I don't think it went 15 minutes. Usually Johnny has very long matches. He said in the past that he doesn't like having short matches. He likes having long matches and having the opportunity to tell a really good story in the ring. So I'm surprised that that was such a short match. I wonder if something's wrong with Damian Priest or what happened there. That's all right. Johnny's the first two-time North American champion. Off the top of my head, he joined Shayna Baszler with the women's title, Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe, and Finn Balor as NXT champion as the only two-time champions in NXT. So Shayna Baszler won the women's title twice, Shinsuke won the NXT title twice, and Samoa Joe won it twice, and Finn Balor won it twice. Yeah, I think those are the only ones. I can't remember. I don't remember any tag teams doing it. I could be wrong. But he joins a very exclusive NXT club. He's very deserving of being in. It's a special thing because usually somebody just wins the title in NXT and then they get moved up to the main roster. So somebody like Finn Balor won the title, went up to the main roster, won the Universal title, got injured. They never really trusted him again after that. And then he came back. So he got lucky in that sense, not only because he was on NXT, which is relatively Vince-free, or comparatively Vince McMahon-free, which is always a good thing these days. But he came back, and so he won the title twice. Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura were feuding when they had the NXT title, so they swapped it. So it's an exclusive club of people. We cut to Cameron Grimes in the back, who's appealing to William Regal as to where this match is even going to take place. Regal says he just needs to go to the parking lot. He says, but Mr. Regal, that's the most dangerous place. Because Cameron Grimes is great. We cut back to the ring. Pat McAfee is here with Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, your new NXT Tag Team Champions. I never thought that Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch were going to be Tag Team Champions. I thought that they were the NXT Tag Team equivalent of Dolph Ziggler, who is a fantastic wrestler, one of the best in the world in terms of talent. I love his in-ring style. Some people don't, whatever. But they use Dolph Ziggler to make new guys look good. A lot of people's first feud or early feud is with Dolph Ziggler. And Dolph is very good at that, but Dolph is too good at that. He said himself, because management now only sees him as a good hand and somebody that can make somebody else look good. And when you can make somebody else look good and you're too good at that, you're never going to be the guy. Because you're going to use you to make the guy. And I thought that Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch were going to be that. Because Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch are always going to have a very physical, hard-hitting match. They're always going to make their opponents look good. And to this point, they always lost. Usually Oney Lorcan losing. But now they're with Pat McAfee. So that's a big deal. Pat McAfee's a very good talker. He came in to NXT with a feud with Adam Cole, who was one of the biggest stars in NXT, and now they have a bit of a stable going on, and that's great for them, and I'm so happy that they have the tag team titles. Feels like a very serious team that can also be funny, as opposed to Breezango, who is funny and can sometimes be serious. There's a difference in how seriously you can take those two things. McAfee says that he had the greatest debut ever in wrestling history at TakeOver 30. He said, and everybody agreed. He said that it was great, and it was the best. I love it when somebody says that everybody said something that is very clearly not true. Pat McAfee's great. He said, after his debut, he says, I had a grueling match. He says, Adam Cole didn't come over to me and shake his hand. He didn't say thank you for what you did. He said, no, he stood over me, and he flexed on top of me. He said, I went home. He said, I'll admit I was sore. I was tired. He said, I probably should have lost a couple pounds before I got in here, I'll admit. He said, I got on a private jet back to Indianapolis, where he lives, and he says all he thought about after that was how much of a bum Adam Cole was. He said, I couldn't handle Adam Cole myself. He had too much to do. He had his podcast. He had a new show. He was on College Game Day. He had a YouTube series, so on and so forth. He said, so he made a call to a younger, stronger, more handsome version of himself. He called Ridge Holland. He said he offered Ridge Holland money. He said, kid, I don't think they're using you right. And Ridge Holland said he doesn't need money. He just needs a car. And so Pat McAfee is the one that paid Ridge Holland to attack him, to attack Adam Cole. It feels like that wasn't the original story, but I love it. If you recall, as soon as it happened, I thought that Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong, two of the members of Undisputed Era with Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, were the ones that paid Ridge Holland to attack Adam Cole. Now, I don't care about being wrong. I haven't gone back, but I would have to imagine that I'm wrong quite a bit more often than I'm right. That's fine. I like when I'm wrong and when wrestling surprises me and when things don't go according to plan. That's 100% fine. And I'm never going to defend an opinion of mine if it turns out to be wrong. If I think ABC is going to happen and CBA happens, I'm never going to say, well, clearly they were going to do ABC, but then they didn't, just to make myself right. You know, nobody likes that. The reason that I thought it was Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong is because that seemed to be what the story was setting up. Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole were clearly turning into good guys. Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly were not. And there was a disconnect between those four. There was a lot less of them coming out together. There was a lot less of them helping each other. It felt like Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole were drifting off. Adam Cole much more so. And I thought that meant that Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong were jealous and they couldn't attack Adam Cole themselves. But what they could do is get the guy who's drifting away from them knocked out for a bit. Then he thinks he needs help. He's probably not going to jump off of the Undisputed Era. Also, it's going to make us look good when we take out Ridge Holland. That's why I thought originally that it was supposed to be Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish. But Ridge Holland got hurt. I think it threw a monkey wrench in the plans. I don't know if I was right. I think the reason for me coming to that conclusion is good. I think I could still have very well have been wrong. Whatever the case, whether they had to pull a 180, pull in case of emergency and call Pat McAfee, or whether this was the story all along, doesn't really matter, because this is great for a few reasons. One, Pat McAfee is great. He is a fantastic talker. He is a fantastic bad guy, which isn't always a translatable skill. Just because you're a good talker doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be good at getting heat and getting people to hate you, so on and so forth, make people want to see you get beat up, blah, blah, blah. Pat McAfee is a natural at this. All of the skills that he has come perfectly into wrestling. And then he's also, for somebody who is green or brand new, he's pretty darn good in the ring. Now, he didn't do anything spectacular in terms of a ring technician in his match with Adam Cole, and Adam Cole certainly has the lion's share of the credit for that match, but that's to be expected. For somebody who was green and was having his first real match, or rather, his first match in NXT, not sure if he's had one before, I don't think so, he handled himself very well, and he was very impressive. And he did the right thing. He came in and he lost. He's somebody who loves wrestling. He's not a celebrity that wanted to come into wrestling and get a win to look tough. He came in and he got beat by Adam Cole, which was the right thing to do. And he made a great accounting for himself. And I didn't think, I thought that we would see him back in NXT. I did not think it was going to be this soon. So I'm very happy to see him. I love this stable that they have going. And I like the feud between his stable and the Undisputed Era. Then it's more of a group thing. It's not all on Pat McAfee to deliver in the ring, because that's not realistic with the amount of time he's going to have to prepare. I like it. So he said that he called Ridge Holland, he bribed him, he said he watched NXT, and the guy he gave a car snapped his leg and ankle. He said it was an expensive mistake. He said, but then I thought about it, am I going too far? Should I just quit now? And then he called Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. He said he called the guy who hurt the guy to work with him and his guy. And he said Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch didn't want money. They're upstanding guys. He said, I can respect that. He said, but then Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch lost to the Undisputed Era, called Pat McAfee back, and said, well, let's make some noise. And so, I love that. This is set up really well. It makes sense that Pat McAfee would attack Adam Cole as a bad guy who lost to him, and how personal that was. It also makes sense that Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch would be sick of just being second or third place in the division and would align themselves with somebody that could help them be successful. So all of this, first off, is it's just really cool to see Pat McAfee in a stable with Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. That's just a really cool sentence to be able to say to you. But it's also something that makes sense based on the storyline that's currently going and all of the history that has gone into Lorcan and Burch with Undisputed Era and Pat McAfee in Undisputed Era. It's perfect. And so, Before Burch and Lorcan can talk, Kyle O'Reilly comes out. It's interesting that he's by himself. Before he can get all the way into the ring, Pete Dunne's music hits. So Pete Dunne is back, and Pete Dunne is ripped to shreds. We haven't seen Pete Dunne since March. I believe he was in NXT UK for a match or two, but I generally don't see NXT UK. I thought he was just going to be in the UK, and I was a little bit bummed because I wouldn't see him, but he's back. And I don't know if there was a travel issue or what it was specifically, but he has been working out in his downtime, and it shows quite a bit. He went from a dude that didn't look like he worked out to a dude that looks like he has always worked out, which always helps when you're making a return if you look different. And he didn't change the way he dresses or acts or anything like that. He's just ripped to shreds, and he looks more vicious. So, Pete Dunne's back. Pete Dunne has two chairs. He gets on the apron with Kyle O'Reilly, hands a chair to Kyle O'Reilly. They get into the ring. McAfee and his boys bail. So now McAfee and his boys are standing on the apron, begging off. And then Kyle O'Reilly drops his chair, and he's holding out his arms to them. And Pete Dunne hits Kyle O'Reilly in the back with a chair, kicks him in the head. And there's a three-on-one beatdown of Kyle O'Reilly with Pat McAfee cheering them on. Lorcan and Burch hit their tag team finisher onto a chair that Pat McAfee sets up. And then Pete Dunne grabs Kyle O'Reilly's left arm and starts bending his hand back like he does. And then he puts his arm on the mat, sticking up, like with his elbow pointed to the ceiling, and steps on his leg real hard. And that looked like it hurt a lot. And that's great. So, there's a big beatdown. And now, it's a weird, and then it's an interesting, and then it's a really fun stable. You have Pat McAfee as your mouthpiece. You have the tag team champions, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, and you have the returning Rip to Shreds Pete Dunne. That's not a stable. That's like if you're playing a 2K video game in universe mode and you just simulate it for a year and they make teams automatically if you let them. That's a stable that would form in a video game, and you'd be like, how did this happen? I don't understand how this came together like this. But now that it's here, it is great. Pat McAfee stands over Kyle O'Reilly and he says, "I'm smarter than you and your friends. We're the new kings of this brand, and that is undisputed." Great line delivery by Pat McAfee. Great of him to use the undisputed line. That's always been a bit corny. It came out great coming out of Pat McAfee's mouth. Very, very interesting that the Undisputed Era did not come out to help. Now, Adam Cole is out with an injury. I can understand that one. Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong weren't there. Now, you could say, well, Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong were not scheduled to be in a match tonight. That's fine. However, neither was Kyle O'Reilly or Pete Dunne, and they were still there. So, if Kyle O'Reilly was there, you would naturally assume that his stablemates would be there with him. However, you would be apparently incorrect in that assumption. So one of two things happened. Either Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong were not there, which is weird considering they knew Pat McAfee was the guy that presumably attacked Adam Cole, and there was a chance he would be on the show. Or Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong were back there and didn't come out to help Kyle O'Reilly when he was getting beat down. Either way, interesting. Not sure where we're going. Just saying, it's weird when you're in a stable and your stablemates don't come out to help you when you're getting destroyed. So we cut from that to Cameron Grimes, who is asking William Regal to don't make me go out there. Just give me a loss, and then I don't have to go out there and do the match. William Regal says no. He says, well, can you just come with me? Come on, Mr. Regal, come with me. Because, I need you to understand, Cameron Grimes is great. I know I didn't used to like Cameron Grimes very much. I didn't understand it. Now I do. He is a national treasure. I never want him to go to the main roster because they will not use him ever. He will be a 24/7 segment guy with R-Truth, and he's so much better than that. Please keep him in NXT forever. He's a treasure. He's so much fun to watch. So, Cameron Grimes goes out to the parking lot, and a beat-up white van pulls up. This is very fortuitous for what's to come now that I'm reading it back, having watched the whole thing. Michael P.S. Hayes, former Doc Hendrick, former Freebird, gets out, cuts a short promo, tells the passenger, thanks for the ride, man, and then just walks off. I don't know why Michael Hayes needed to be here. Don't know why he couldn't have just gotten in the van. Presumably that's to pop people that remember him, or I don't know. It didn't do anything for me. Freebirds are a weird gimmick when you go back and watch it. Not a big fan of anything that was going on there. I'm going to leave it there. Okay, sure. Michael Hayes is here getting a ride. Grimes then gets in the back of the van, which I distinctly remember my mom never telling me not to do because I just understood that you don't get into a van. I'm a full adult with a mortgage and a wife and a dog, and I wouldn't get into a van. I would be nervous getting, I don't care if we're test driving a van. I'm not getting in a van. I watch movies and TV shows and read and listen to books, and all of those things and everything I've ever watched or consumed leads me to believe you're not supposed to get into a van. It occurs to me at this point that this is a full-on cinematic match. It's shot more like a movie, kind of like how the Boneyard match was with Undertaker and AJ Styles. The van drops Grimes off, and he's walking by basically in a, it almost looks like a forest, and he's walking by, and he walks by this big tree where Dexter Lumis is in the tree looking at him. He doesn't see him yet. Seems unfair, wrestling nerd time, that Dexter Lumis got to go to that location first and get set up before Cameron Grimes could get there. That doesn't seem sportsmanlike to me. This match, it occurs to me at this point, is actually way more similar to that Randy Orton Bray Wyatt House of Horrors, I think, match, where they basically fought in a haunted house. But it's funny, I'm reading my notes. I wrote, this is already way better. It's essentially a monster movie. So this is when it first started, and Cameron Grimes is walking through the house. He runs into the mounted deer head on the wall, and it's a lot of Cameron Grimes and comedy, but it's also scary. And this was the first couple jump scares with the referee in the corner and the woman in the shower, where this match was still just fun to me. You're going to hear it turn through my notes here. But just having it on Cameron Grimes was really funny. And there were too many jump scares for my liking. Still enjoyable to this point. And I wrote, next, this is actually a really good production quality segment. A lot of jump scares, but it's really well done. I still like it. I can remember as I was typing it. Because next, I'm remarking on, I think this match actually would have worked, or rather, would have made more sense if it were Cameron Grimes versus Bray Wyatt. Because Dexter Lumis, is a stalker and serial killer, and he tends to be in the shadows watching his opponent. He is not mystical or magical in any way. If this were The Undertaker, or who is a literal dead man who can shoot lightning sometimes and is superhuman sometimes, or if it were Bray Wyatt, who used to be a creepy cult leader with some voodoo magic, or now Mr. Rogers, but with a demon, which is actually a very succinct way to describe the Fiend now that I think about it. If it were either of those two, having a haunted house with a bunch of scares and literal monsters would make sense. I don't understand why there are monsters with Dexter Lumis. Like, Dexter Lumis doesn't get attacked by any monsters, so it's not just that there are monsters here. It's presumably that Dexter Lumis is in some way causing this to happen. And Dexter Lumis has never been presented as somebody who is magical. Grimes runs back to the van, and Dexter Lumis is now in the driver's seat, whips his head over to him. Grimes gets out of the van, and he runs off, and we get "to be continued" across the screen. It's interesting to break up the match. I think I actually do like that, where you have a cinematic match like this, but you break it up. That's what we thought was going to happen for Money in the Bank, but it just played straight through. I think it would have helped if it had been broken up through the show. Next, we have Raquel Gonzalez coming out for her match against Rhea Ripley. This is a female version of a hoss fight. I'm not sure what you would call that, but that's what this is. A hoss fight, generally in wrestling, is when two big dudes, it's usually bigger, chunky dudes, just hit each other real, real hard. It's two big, strong men hitting each other real hard. And in this case, it's two big, strong women hitting each other real hard. I don't know what you call a hoss fight if it's women. I don't know if it's still a hoss fight. I don't know if that's weird to say, so I don't want to say it was a hoss fight. I want to be considerate of that. But these two hit each other real hard, and this was real physical, and it's really fun. Rhea eventually hits the Riptide, which is impressive on Raquel Gonzalez, who I think is bigger than Rhea. Hits the Riptide, picks up the win. It was very fun. They just beat the hell out of each other for a while, and then the right person won. I'm a big fan of matches that make sense storyline-wise. The right person wins, and then they just have a really good match. There's a few ways to at least get a good match, and I think beating the hell out of each other, while not viable for long-term, is a good way to do that, and it made the most sense. I think Raquel Gonzalez is still relatively new to wrestling, like, as in, you don't necessarily want to put her out there for, like, an hour-long Iron Man or Iron Woman match, but she is very capable, and she's going to be really good for NXT, and I think once she breaks off from Dakota Kai, she's going to be really good, but I think right now she's still learning, if I'm not completely wrong, and Rhea always has really good matches. This is nothing new to her. It was just really fun to watch. We cut from that to Cameron Grimes running down the street. He's got no shirt and jeans. His hat's gone. He's clearly been running for a while because he's barely able to run. And it says, "We'll be right back." We cut back into the building, and we cut to the announce desk where Vic Joseph is dressed as Waldo from Where's Waldo. He looks like Waldo. Wouldn't have thought that at any point up until I saw it with my own eyes. And Wade Barrett is dressed as Bad News Barrett from his first run in WWE. He has a little sticker on his jacket, and he has the mini gavel. And man, I love that, and I laughed so hard. And people who don't know Bad News Barrett would have just been looking at Waldo, and it would have been great. But as somebody who loved Bad News Barrett, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. I just laughed and laughed, and it made me so happy. So Grimes is back, and he basically runs back into the building, and then Grimes is up near the stage, near the gravestones, and here's where it gets dumb, because out of the gravestones come zombies, a couple zombies. Don't worry, it's gonna get dumber. And Grimes runs from the zombies, as you would, and runs into the ring where Dexter Lumis pops in, and now he's there. So they fight for like a little bit, and then the zombies are in the ring. There's like three of them. It's at this point I wrote, why does Lumis have zombies? What? Because the zombies aren't attacking him. The zombies are clearly on his side attacking Cameron Grimes. At what point did Dexter Lumis go from a creepy stalker serial killer to a magic man? One of them, Cameron Grimes, hits the cave in, which is where he stomps the dude in the chest, and it usually doesn't look good because that's a hard move to pull off without hurting somebody, I imagine. One of the zombies climbs up Dexter Lumis, like like climbs up his back and then like acrobatically contortionisty like goes around his chest and then back up his back, and then Dexter Lumis gets that zombie into a press like above his head, and then Dexter Lumis throws a zombie at Cameron Grimes. You know, sometimes this job is harder than you would think it would be. Because a lot of the time, I get to just talk to you folks about wrestling, and that's my favorite thing to do. But sometimes, a serial killer throws a zombie at a cowboy, and I have to talk about that, you know? That's just where I am in my life, that this is what we have to do together, you know? Like, I don't like it, you don't like it, but we're here, and it happened. So that happens. Lumis locks in the silence. Cameron Grimes passes out. And then the zombies are at ringside. I know you thought we were done, but we're not done. Zombies are at ringside, and then they do like a weird, different interpretive dances, kind of. Climbing, and they climb into the ring, and they're around Grimes. And at this point, Dexter Lumis is on the like entryway, and as the zombies get to Cameron Grimes, the lights go out around the ring, so you can't see the ring anymore. And Dexter Lumis was looking over his shoulder, but then Dexter Lumis looks directly into the camera, and then it says the end over the screen. It's interesting. Anytime there's a cinematic match, you can set your watch by a couple things. I'm going to like it. I'm going to love it if it's The Fiend, because I admit I am biased. And Matt is gonna hate it. Matt's gonna hate it. And before this, I never fully understood why Matt hated it. Like, I understood his points, you know, but I never jived with the idea that it's silly and it makes a mockery of wrestling. Some of the points that he's brought up in the past about Money in the Bank or, you know, the WrestleMania match with The Fiend and John Cena. Matt, more often than not to speak for him, but here we go, is going to think that they are stupid. And to this point, before I watched this, I never understood that. I never strongly disliked a cinematic match. Well, here we are. Because I love Dexter Lumis as a character, and I love Cameron Grimes as a character. But to have zombies and monsters under Dexter Lumis's control... And look, I understand that it's Halloween, and I understand it's Halloween Havoc, and you're going to have it be scary. Got that. There was a way to do this and make it scary without a bunch of monster jump scares that don't make any sense. And here's the weird thing about wrestling. I can absolutely suspend my disbelief that a wannabe cowboy got into a situation with a creepy serial killer stalker. And if you had set up this match in such a way that it was basically a Michael Myers movie, which it seemed like they were going to do, but they didn't, where Dexter Lumis keeps coming for Cameron Grimes, and Cameron Grimes gets away and runs away, but can't get away from Dexter Lumis. If that had been this match, it would have been very suspenseful, it would have been scary, but it would have made sense. And weirdly, as a wrestling fan, I can suspend my disbelief in that situation because that makes sense with the information that I have been provided before the match. But if you're going to have a match where a creepy serial killer stalker can now control zombies and referee monsters and monsters who wait in the shower as attractive ladies, that's when it turns stupid, and that's when I can't enjoy it anymore because I can only think about how it's stupid. Now look, on its best day, and I say this as somebody who has loved wrestling for most of my life, on its best day, wrestling is dumb. And it's hard to explain to somebody. I always try and explain it to my wife. She usually just goes with, that's dumb. And I have to agree with her because usually she's right. She doesn't get it. But this, even for me, was dumb. And I didn't skip it because I love you guys. And I want to give you a complete breakdown of what I see. But this made no sense. This was essentially WWE's version of a horror movie, which is just a bunch of jump scares. There was some good stuff here, but I can't suspend my disbelief that all of a sudden he's magic and there's dumb interpretive dancing zombies that I guess are going to eat Cameron Grimes now. I don't know. And then Dexter Lumis looking right into the camera, I think was supposed to be scary, but made me laugh. Not in a, I'm cool, I laughed at a scary thing way, in a, why is he looking at the camera way. This wasn't, I didn't like this, and I really want to. And I've been trying to talk myself into liking it, and I just can't do it. And now I get why Matt hates some of those cinematic matches. Matt, I get it. The Fiend is still great. That WrestleMania match was still great. I still whomped you on that WrestleMania podcast. But in this case, your points are valid and you are right. We're just going to move on because now I'm sad. It's a promo package for Io Shirai defending her women's title against Candice LeRae. Still don't understand why Candice LeRae is getting another shot at the title. I mean, I understand she won number one contendership, but I don't understand why she was in that match because she just lost a title match. Whatever. That's fine. It's going to be a good match, and it's transitional. Candice is out first. I did not think that Johnny or Candice, who are married in real life, were going to win. I was surprised by Johnny winning. Happy about it, but surprised. But Candice is definitely not winning. I don't know if it's dead set that Rhea Ripley is the one that's going to win that women's title. I think so, down the road. But I think it's going to be a while with Io Shirai, because you have something special here, and you don't just end that unless you have a bigger story in mind. We have Poppy out on stage, who's going to be, I guess, playing Io Shirai out. Poppy is Poppy's super weird, and then she starts performing, and the music is really cool. Poppy is basically a musician who is like if you programmed a robot to act human and made it look human, but you didn't do a very good job, so the robot has trouble expressing human emotions in a human way. This is the best way I can describe Poppy to you. But the music is really banging, so that's fine. Damian Priest's intro, to me, was better, but the point stands, live performances out to the ring make you look like a big star, and it made EO look like one here. I don't think you should use that all the time, but at takeovers, or this is a Halloween Havoc, so this is a special episode, I dig it, doing with the EO. I wouldn't have thought that Damian Priest would be the other person to get that, but I like it. So, Shotzi's back on the stage with the wheel. She did an outfit change in between the last time. She now has like a Red Devil outfit on with horns. You know she had so much fun doing this. She had to have. She is absolutely this person. She's the literal most perfect person WWE or any other wrestling company has ever had to host something like this. And she spins the wheel. We have a TLC match. They refer to it as tables, ladders, and scares because it's Halloween. I rolled my eyes at that, but I think it's because I just finished Dexter Lumis, Cameron Grimes, and I was in a cranky mood. TLC match is a no disqualification match. The only way to win is to climb up a ladder and retrieve the title from a hook that's basically hanging up from the ceiling. Perfect. Great. They're going to have a really good match. Candice LeRae pulls a table from under the ring, and there's a bag on that table. Candice LeRae dumps that bag out. In that bag are severed arms. So that's, I don't usually cover what goes on in a match, but that's a thing that happened here, and I needed you to know about it. They both go through tables from the apron to the outside, and then the Grim Reaper is, or the person from Scream, pick your favorite, comes out and pulls Candice LeRae back into the ring. So I presume that this is either the same person, or this is Austin Theory, or this is Indy Hartwell. Makes the most sense if the first one was Austin Theory and the second one was Indy Hartwell, who's been helping Candice LeRae and Johnny a little bit. Helped Candice LeRae win a match last time I covered NXT, so 2 weeks ago. by handing Candace brass knuckles. So I'm going to assume it was Indy Hartwell. We didn't see who it was. But Grim Reaper or person from Scream, pick your favorite, throws Candace back into the ring and then puts Candace LeRae on their shoulders and starts climbing the ladder. So it looks like Candace LeRae is just going to be kind of handed the title. But then Shotzi Blackheart decides that she's not just going to hose, she's going to get in there. And she grabs the Grim Reaper off of the ladder and drops the Grim Reaper and gets out of the ring. Shotzi doesn't necessarily care if Candace wins, but what you're not going to do is have a Grim Reaper help you. That's where Shotzi draws the line, and I respect it. So Candace is on the ladder, and Io grabs another ladder, sets it up, but then Candace just drops her. Looked like a not fun fall. Io Shirai just plops on the ground. But next was a thing that was worse because Io pops up and tips the ladder over. Candace LeRae goes from just maybe two rings from the top of a ladder out of the ring onto the floor, except that she crashes through a ladder first. And you can set up a ladder to break in a good way all you want. That's still going to hurt so bad. So Candace LeRae's dead. She's not really, but she's dead. So Io picks up the women's title and retains. Of course she did. This was an excellent match as well. I don't want to see a rematch again because we've already had two wins by Io Shirai over Candace LeRae, but they had an excellent match. So I'll be interested to see who's next for Io Shirai and what was up with those Grim Reapers. I'm interested to see if it's weird now between Johnny and Candace because Johnny was successful and Candace was not. They wanted to be the first man and wife, husband and wife championship duo, and Johnny fulfilled his end of the bargain. Candace did not. That'll be interesting. Also interested to see what happens with Pat McAfee, his stable, and see if we have some resolution as to why Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong weren't out there. Interested to see where Johnny goes next. Interested to see where Rhea goes next. Not interested to see where Dexter Lumis goes next right now. Interested to see what Cameron Grimes does if he got eaten by zombies. Hope not. But we're going to have to wait a week to find that out. Which means we're done with the show, which means I am almost done talking to you wonderful people. So you can now take your head out of the corner. I hope that you have learned a lesson about responsibility, young man or young woman. Don't let this happen again. And then give me your cell phone. Nope, give me your cell phone. You're not, no cell phone privileges for a week because you need to respect this house and respect me and respect the rules. Because as long as you're living under my roof, you're not going to let wrestling get crazy. But in the meantime, I've been your host. Again, my name is Zachary Smith. I host your NXT podcast when I'm not on vacation. I host an award-winning billion-dollar empire podcast. Millions of downloads. Don't go check. I promise that's what it is. You can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling, other fun things over there. You can let me know if you want to hear anything on the show, if you want to suggest anything. Just about every week, the news and notes section comes from Twitter. So hit me up over there. In the meantime, that's it for me. So, thank you for listening. I've been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic. And again, thank you for listening.